a controversial music genre called narcocorridos, drug ballads, reflects the news of Mexico's bloody drug cartel war. Ballads are like journalism put to song, telling stories of drug lords, arrests, shootouts, daring operations, and betrayals. But like the cartel war itself, writing corridos about drug traffickers can be risky. And here's John Burnett has this report from the corrido heartland along the Texas-Mexico border.
It's a slow night on Calle del Taco in the border town of Reynosa, Mexico. Lovers sit in their vehicles eating tacos and sipping bottles of cold beer while the trios warm up, musicians with scarred instruments wearing cowboy shirts buttoned tight across paunches and open at the top, machismo style.
En San José, Costa Rica, lo tomaron prisionero.
They're singing an older narco-corrido about the 1985 capture in Costa Rica of Mexican drug lord Rafael Caro Quintero.
Así el corrido comienza del señor Caro Quintero.
The composer of the Ballad of Caro Quintero is one of Mexico's most prolific corridistas, Reynaldo El Gallero Martinez, a 71-year-old fighting cock breeder with a pencil mustache and a gambler's grin. He's with us tonight, listening approvingly to this rendition of one of his most famous corridos.
Si es que quieren quedar vivos.
Los niños de Reynosa.
The kids of Reynosa and Matamoros and many parts of Mexico learn the words to a corrido before they learn the national anthem.
Martinez may be overstating it, but it's undeniable that the popularity of narco-corridos has tracked the spiraling cartel violence in Mexico. More than 13,500 people have been killed in drug-related violence since President Felipe Calderón took office in 2006. Standing nearby, guitarist Agustin Llamas says if they don't sing narco-corridos out here on the Calle del Taco, they won't make any money. The people say, sing me a corrido about narcos with bullets and marijuana. They don't want a bolero. They want a narco corrido. That's how it is here on the border. Corridos have chronicled life and death in Mexico since the time of the Mexican Revolution. Narco corridos first came into vogue in the 1970s, then exploded in the 1990s. The more the cartels make news, it seems, the more songs there are about them. To make his point, Reynaldo Martinez took us to a music store on a busy downtown street in Reynosa. The manager pointed out her best-selling CDs. On the covers are musicians in cowboy attire, gripping AK-47s, aping the traffickers they sing about. Afterwards, Martinez tries to explain Mexicans' enduring fascination with stories about smugglers. He compares it to the reasons why they go to bullfights.
They always want to see the bull gore the matador. We always want the weak one to win, and that's how we see the narco traffickers.
But now that drug mafias like the Sinaloans, La Familia, and the Zetas have grown more powerful than the police or even the army, they're not the underdogs anymore. The romanticizing of traffickers and the glorification of the drug trade has irritated the Mexican government to the point that narco corridos are banned from the Mexican airwaves. And so, a curious flip-flop has occurred. The program Killer Corridos airs each afternoon on Radio Papalote in Edinburg, Texas, about 20 miles north of the Rio Grande. It's one of the stations along the U.S. side of the border that broadcasts prohibited corridos deep into Mexico. It's the flip side of the famous border blasters that thrived in Mexican border towns from the 1930s through the 80s. High-powered transmitters broadcast preachers, hucksters, and rock and roll into the American heartland. The fast-talking DJ is Jose Jaime Zavala. He says it's dicey playing a type of corrido, for instance, that mentions the name of a cartel or a particular trafficker. A rival cartel might take offense.
Soy del grupo de los Zetas que cuidamos al patrón.
Ahí hay uno que se llama Escolta Suicida. Bueno, ese habla de los Zetas.
There's one called Suicide Bodyguards that tells of the Zetas. This is very dangerous to play on the radio because you don't know if someone's going to hear it and there will be reprisals. The station owner told me to try to avoid strong corridos.
Though narco corridos have created hits for dozens of bands throughout Mexico, they create something of an occupational hazard. More than a dozen Mexican musicians were murdered between 2006 and 2008. Motives are shadowy, but it's suspected some were killed for what they sang. One was the 25-year-old banda star from Sinaloa named Valentin Elizalde. He was machine-gunned in his car as he left a concert right here in Reynosa 3 years ago. People suspect one of his songs offended the Gulf Cartel that controls this territory. The murder of Valentin Elizalde sent a chill through the narco corrido music business. Martin Gamboa, an up-and-coming singer who lives in Matamoros, says musicians have to be careful these days.
Many times you can't put certain words in a corrido. What you have to do is use nuance so that you don't offend anybody. And if any of my corridos has offended anyone, I ask their pardon.
Or if you do put the name of a powerful drug lord in your song, you'd better be somebody like Chuy Quintanilla. He's a blustery 58-year-old songster from Reynosa whose brother is the late narco corrido superstar Beto Quintanilla. Perhaps Chuy's musical bravado has something to do with the fact that he used to be a federal judicial police commander, a position in Mexico that's ascribed godlike powers. In the current climate of caution, Chuy belts out corridos other artists wouldn't whisper. This ballad extols Antonio Tony Tormenta Cardenas, the current chief of the murderous Gulf Cartel. But Chuy doesn't like the term narco-corridos. Let's do away with the term narco-corrido. It's vulgar, he says. A narco is a person who's guilty of a crime that you or I can't ascertain. Only a judge can say. No, Chuy Quintanilla writes corridos about current events. Time will tell. Tony Tormenta is currently on Mexico's most wanted list and under indictment by the DEA. John Burnett, NPR News.
And you can find some popular narco corridos. Read the lyrics to one. Hear the story of how one singer actually tried to bribe John Burnett at nprmusic.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
And last night here in Los Angeles, the new music director of the Philharmonic conducted the season's opening gala. Gustavo Dudamel is all the rage here in L.A. He's young, Latino, and his talent is recognized around the world. In the past few days, Angelino's got a preview of what's in store, and Piers Ina Jaffe reports.
For months, Gustavo Dudamel's likeness has been plastered on billboards and bus shelters all over town. And what a picture. His arms are thrust into the air, his head full of dark curls flying, his face lost in ecstasy. Some people stood in line for hours to get tickets to the free concert he conducted last Saturday at the Hollywood Bowl.
I'm expecting to be flabbergasted,
said Leanne Hahn, one of 18,000 lucky ticket holders. There were half a dozen opening acts, jazz, Latin, pop. Finally, with a full moon rising, Gustavo Dudamel took the stage. When the cheering finally died down, the hype dissolved in the power of Beethoven's Ninth. Dudamel is just 28 years old and the proud product of what is known in his native Venezuela as El Sistema, the system. It provides classical music training for tens of thousands of kids, many of them living in poverty. Dudamel began playing violin at age 4 and started conducting at 11. When he was 18, he was named music director of the Simón Bolívar Youth Orchestra, composed of El Sistema's most gifted musicians. But at a recent news conference, Dudamel wanted to make sure everyone knew one thing.
I don't feel that I'm a prodigy, you know. I don't feel that I'm a genius because I have to study a lot. I'm a little bit slow sometimes. So that's why I'm not a genius. People say, oh, the wonderkin. wonder kid, no.
Nevertheless, for the past 5 years, Dudamel's been in demand as a guest conductor with major orchestras around the world. But he prefers the role of music director, a position he now holds with three orchestras, the L.A. Phil, Sweden's Gothenburg Symphony, and the Simon Bolivar Youth Orchestra. In an interview, Dudamel said that's not as taxing as it sounds.
When you are a guest conductor, you, of course, is great, but when you have the chance to develop something, you know, very deep with an orchestra, talking about sound, about ideas, we are building something very important.
Before a rehearsal at the Bowl last Friday, Mark Swed, the classical music critic for the Los Angeles Times, said that despite Dudamel's youth, the Los Angeles Philharmonic was not really taking a risk by putting him in charge.
Having begun conducting as early as he did, and having had an orchestra with which to work, this has never happened before. Most conductors take up conducting in their late teens or 20s or even later, and by that point they don't have orchestras with which they can actually practice. So the baton in his hand is utterly natural.
The musicians in the Philharmonic seem to think Dudamel is Mr. Right. Christopher Still plays the trumpet.
After 30 seconds on the podium, it seemed as though he'd been conducting us for years. It feels as though it's more of a collaboration. At the end of the concert, he will actually turn around, step off the podium, put his arms around the musicians, and bow with us. I have never seen a conductor do that before.
But in rehearsal, it's clear that Dudamel is not just one of the gang.
It's an element very important, please, 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 dears, to remember.
He's aware of every complexity and works relentlessly to make sure none of it is lost.
Because everything is happening, you know. They are singing one part, and then pam, 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 and then fa-la-la-la-la-la, tan, 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 pu, 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 ta-ra-ra-ra. It's many things happening at the same time. We have to put order in the kitchen, please.
He talks, okay. He sings, he claps, even plays a little air guitar to get his points across. And because there was a microphone on the podium just for this rehearsal, we now also know that Gustavo Dudamel throws himself body and soul and voice into his work. During the concert, however, there was no mic on the podium, so you can't hear the maestro groaning along with Beethoven's greatest hit. Really, you can't. Music lovers outside of Los Angeles can hear for themselves. Last night's gala concert is available at nprmusic.org. And next spring, Gustavo Dudamel and the LA Philharmonic tour the country. Ina Jaffe, NPR News.
Roseanne Cash has a new album in which she sings one of the more famous lines in country music.
The lights in the harbor don't shine for me.
Many artists have recorded this song over half a century, and we're going to listen this morning to the many ways it's changed. The song is called Sea of Heartbreak. Roseanne Cash sings it with Bruce Springsteen.
Sea of Heartbreak, lost love, loneliness, memories of your caress. So
the song is on Roseanne Cash's album, The List. The album title refers to a list of timeless songs made years ago by her father, Johnny Cash.
I was out on the road with him, and he mentioned a song and while we were riding on the tour bus one day, and I said, I don't know that one. And he mentioned another, and I said, I don't know that one either, Dad. And he got very alarmed. I was so steeped in the Beatles and Buffalo Springfield, and he thought I was missing something essential about my own musical genealogy. So he spent the rest of the day making this list.
Sea of Heartbreak made the list. Co-authored by the same songwriter who wrote hits like Walk On By, its first recording came in 1961. It was by the country star Don Gibson.
I think he was a bit tortured, and he had somewhat of a difficult life, and all of his experience and his longing and his own heartbreak is really apparent in his vocal. And the way he kind of hums into the first line, you know, and throughout the song is so beautiful.
The
it uses a metaphor, and it keeps that metaphor all the way through. And many songs that have tried to do that, kind of fall over into kitsch trying to do that.
They get ridiculous after
They get ridiculous, right. It becomes a parody. This song starts with that metaphor of sailing on the sea of heartbreak, and it uses it to absolute perfect effect. You know, the lights in the harbor don't shine for me. Oh, God, it just breaks your heart. This sea of heartbreak, lost love, loneliness. But, you know, there are some other really interesting versions, Steve. I don't know if you've heard the Searchers version.
I have heard the Searchers version.
It's beautiful.
Sea of heartbreak. Love,
you like that with the harmonies kind of trailing behind the singer almost?
I do. It's interesting. Everybody wants to reinterpret that low male voice on the Gibson record in some way.
Jimmy Buffett sings it, and it sounds to me like a Caribbean church hymn.
Yeah, it even has steel drum on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perhaps a mistake.
Why? I don't know. I like it. But he really slows it down.
He really slows it down. But I think it's slowed down a bit much. They have to kind of drag over those phrases.
Oh, what I'd give to sail back to shore, back to your arms once more.
Now, when I think about the way that your father, Johnny Cash, recorded this same song, Sea of Heartbreak, I almost want to use the word resolute. He sounds resolute with the tempo that he chooses and the way that he sings it.
I always thought his version was a little aggressive. You know, he was recording with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers,
mm-hmm.
and I think maybe he was a bit too energized by them.
The Sea of Heartbreak, lost love and loneliness, memories of your caress, so divine, how I wish you were mine again, my dear. I'm on this sea of tears, sea of heartbreak.
You mentioned that you think your father might have been affected by collaborating with another musician, and of course mm-hmm. you collaborate here, not only with your husband, John Leventhal, who produces and plays guitar,
mm-hmm.
but you also bring in Bruce Springsteen to sing some harmonies.
Yeah, I couldn't find anybody good, so I got Bruce. You know, I wanted to do this song as a duet, and it was John's idea to ask Bruce, and I thought, yeah, maybe there's a 50-50 chance Bruce will do it. He doesn't do that many duets. But he said yes right away. And, of course, he knew the song. He's very steeped in country and roots music. And when John put the vocals together, finally, he said, my God, it's so romantic. And this is my own husband talking.
Sea of heartbreak.
Bruce, who knew he was such a great country crooner?
Oh, what I'd give to sail back to shore, back to your arms once more.
We made this song even more introspective than I think the Don Gibson version.
Did you experiment with different tempos, instrumentations, ways to play this, given that there are so many different versions of it?
Yes. John wrote the arrangement for this, and he actually wrote four different arrangements before we got to this one. And it was just torturing him. And then he went to the studio alone one night to work on it. It was really keeping him up. And he came home, and he said, I've got it. And his face was just lit up.
Come to my rescue. Take me and keep me away from the sea.
What do you think your father might have thought of this version if he'd heard it?
I think my dad would have been so proud. You know, I spent my life as a songwriter, sometimes pushing away this music. And I wish he could see me embrace it so fully.
Memories of your caress, so divine, I wish you were mine again.
You can hear all of Roseanne Cash's The List at npr.org.
Sea of heartbreak.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News.
Sea of heartbreak.
I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montaigne.
The Sea of Heartbreak.